Hi, I'm Riley Fessler. I'm a podcast producer here at the DSR Network, which means that my job is to make sure that we have great content and great guests across all of our shows. Our programming is supported by our members, and for that, we are truly grateful. I hope that you'll consider becoming a member to support the work that we do. Members receive an ad-free listening experience, bonus content for nearly all of our shows, early access to episodes, enhanced show notes, and access to our exclusive DSR Slack and Discord communities. Membership is just $7 per month or $70 per year. To become a member, please visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy. Thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. Texas is a state that seems to break the hearts of Democrats everywhere in just about every cycle. It keeps seeming within reach for the party, yet it always slips away at the last minute, showing its true colors, which are deep red. Now hopes are rising again. On Tuesday, Congressman Colin Allred, a former NFL player and civil rights lawyer, captured the Democratic nomination to unseat Senator Ted Cruz, and he's vowing a campaign that will appeal to a wide range of voters. Yet Beto O'Rourke, who in 2018 ran one of the most promising Democratic campaigns in Texas in years, fell nearly 3 points short of beating Cruz. What will be different this time? Here to talk about this is Congressman Allred himself. Welcome, Congressman.
Thanks so much for having me.
Can you tell us a bit about your background for starters?
Sure. I'm a fourth generation Texan, and that means a lot to Texans. And I was born and raised in Dallas. My single mom was a public school teacher, and we don't pay our teachers enough in Texas, and I'm sure in a lot of places around the country. So my mom had to work sometimes two jobs to make ends meet, and I relied on my community. I relied on my public schools that I went to, on my local YMCA, on teachers and coaches who went above and beyond. They gave me a chance to chase my version of the American dream. And that led me to a scholarship to play football at Baylor University, where I became captain of the football team and had a degree in history and was all ready to go to law school when I had a chance to pursue a different dream of becoming an NFL player. And I played for the Tennessee Titans for 5 years before a neck injury sent me to law school, where I got into voting rights because I was so concerned about what was happening in Texas regarding restricting the right to vote. And served in the Obama administration. And then, like a lot of folks, the election 2016 happened. And, my wife and I were trying to figure out how we could best serve our community. And I decided to do something kind of crazy. I ran against the 22-year incumbent Republican who had been unopposed in the previous election, who was the chairman of the Rules Committee, who was, kind of a big deal. And nobody thought we could beat him. I remember 538 gave me about a 10% chance to win about a month out from the election. But we beat him by nearly 7 points. So that's how I got into Congress. Had a tough re-election. In my time in Congress, I've tried to serve in a way that stands up for my values, but I think also it brings folks together that you might not often see on the same sides of issues.
Well, look, you're facing another long shot here. To have any prayer of winning in Texas, a Democrat, statewide, a Democrat would have to run up huge numbers in the cities and shave down the margins in all those rural counties, of course. But what also makes Texas tough is the suburbs around places like Houston, Dallas, and Fort Worth. Some of those are pretty Republican places too, right?
Well, I kind of disagree with your framing, I have to be honest with you. Okay. We're not a long shot. You just talked about how Beto lost by 2.5 points. I think in most states and most times we would say, hey, that means that we very nearly won there. We should try and go again. Instead of seeing it as, well, we didn't get it there, we can't do it. And so I kind of reject that framing. And I also will tell you, I was elected by these folks in these kind of, I guess what you could call Republican suburbs. They're not Republican. They voted for me. They voted for Lizzie Fletcher in Houston. They are areas that are demographically incredibly diverse, that are changing rapidly. But there's also a lot of folks there who were George W. Bush Republicans, who were Mitt Romney Republicans, Liz Cheney Republicans, if you will. But who now vote for me and support me and block walk for me. And that's how I got into Congress. And so I think that there's probably you know, nationally some misconception about what's happening in Texas and where it's happening. It's certainly true that we need to get more of our vote out from our major metros. We have, you know, four major metros that have the vast majority of our population, and that are incredibly diverse, that are dynamic, that are growing rapidly, that contain so much of our economic activity. And I certainly also want to make my pitch to rural Texans, but we're a state that's very close. We're at the same margins that Georgia had before we got a breakthrough there with, you know, a black guy and a Jewish guy get elected to the Senate in Georgia that I didn't think was going to happen either. Joe Biden lost Texas by 5 points. So we are a state that's trending towards us, that we should be excited about. I think the folks around the country should feel like this is a good chance to knock off the worst senator in the country and to put in somebody who I think will also be someone who can be a leader and lead us forward and bring us back together.
It's really interesting to me that you bring in Georgia here, because I think what we're talking about here is a certain type of Sunbelt suburb. And I want to ask you about this, because for a lot of our listeners, I think they think suburbs and they think, oh, these places are shifting Democratic in the Trump era, which is obviously true in a lot of places. But some of these suburbs are a little different, right? You talked about the McCain Republicans and those sorts of Republicans. These are the people in some of these suburbs, right? These are old line Republican Sunbelt suburbs that are not the same as the Philadelphia suburbs or Milwaukee suburbs or something like that, right? And so it's sort of both difficult but also gettable, as you say, because of MAGA, right?
I think because of that, also just because, you know, we're experiencing some changes in our politics. And also, if you have the right kind of Democratic candidates who can, you know, folks can see their values reflected in them, then we can get these votes. That's absolutely true. And like I said, I represented that kind of a district until they redrew my district in the last cycle here. You know, my first, you know, two elections were in a district like that. That was, you know, a Republican district drawn to be a Republican district by a gerrymandered legislature that was trying to gerrymander the congressional districts, right? So it's certainly true that those are changing in that regard. But it's also true that there's incredible diversity. I think folks probably don't realize that's occurring in the Dallas suburbs, the Houston suburbs, around Austin and San Antonio. And when I say suburbs, it's also not really a specific enough term, because sometimes it's in the middle of our cities. It's just places that were previously quite Republican and that no longer are. But I'll say this, I don't really see voters that way anymore. I see us as our coalition is changing. For me, folks who believe in democracy, folks who think that we should respect elections, folks who think that we should stand up to, you know, strong men and dictators around the world like Putin and Xi, those folks are part of my coalition. And we are on the same side in what is a real fight here to, I think, determine where we're going to go forward as a country. And so whether they want to call themselves Democrats or Republicans, I don't really care. I know that they are folks who are part of our coalition, and they're folks who I want to get engaged and who I have. And that's how I got to Congress. And that's how I'm going to beat Ted Cruz also.
I want to get to that stuff about Trump and dictators in a bit, but you mentioned earlier that you really hope to make a pitch to rural voters. So how do you do that? How do you shave those margins down in the rural counties?
Well, I think Ted Cruz's policies have been disastrous for our rural communities. We are experiencing a rash of hospital closures across rural Texas that's being driven by our just unbelievably high uninsured rate. We have the highest uninsured rate in the country, which is in part because our state has refused to expand Medicaid, but also in part because folks like Ted Cruz have made it harder for us to expand healthcare in certain areas and to lower costs. And so that's led to, you know, some areas having, you know, basically healthcare deserts where it's, you know, a long drive to access an emergency room. We have, you know, generations of farmers that are aging out and they don't have a generation coming behind them. And we need to have, you know, policies that are, you know, specifically targeted to try and, you know, help deal with that. You know, Ted Cruz is only offering culture wars. He's not really concerned with that. We're seeing a lot of our rural communities having teacher shortages and really concerned about their public education system. Ted Cruz is right now, you know, pushing a voucher system at the state level to try and take money out of our public schools. And the only reason it hasn't passed is because rural Republicans in our state legislature have been saying no. And so to me, his policies have been disastrous for rural Texas and what he's pursuing right now. And so I want to make sure that folks know that. And I recognize that, you know, we're not going to get everybody. But I also take voters seriously, and I believe that when you put the facts in front of them and you give them a chance to actually hear what your ideas are and how you'll be better for them, that we can get some of those folks. And I want to make sure we're making that pitch.
Look, I mean, between the failure to expand Medicaid, the disaster of rural hospitals, and the utter lack of a real rural agenda among Republicans, it would seem to be that Democrats have a good case to make to rural voters. But as you point out, the cultural stuff, it just has taken hold in those places in a way that I think nobody has quite figured out how to crack.
Yeah, that's before we get to, you know, broadband access and you know, water investments, all things that, you know, Ted Cruz voted against that I voted for. But you're right. I mean, we have to recognize that, you know, there's a reason why we've seen folks like Ted Cruz pursuing these culture wars. It's because they think it's effective for them. But I think that there are folks out there who would prefer that you pursue things that would help them and their family, and that there's a certain breaking point with these culture wars with folks where it's like, well, listen, okay, I hear you on that, but what about how are we going to deal with the issues we're facing? And so I think we have to make that pitch and make it very proactively. But I also think that we need to take on some of these culture wars and point out just how shallow they are and break down some of the misinformation in some cases, because in my experience, some of them are based on just outright lies or fabrications. And when you can break that down by responding and doing it in a way that, you know, folks can understand, I do think you can kind of reel back in some of these things that are obviously not true.
Right. What I think I hear there is that it's Ted Cruz is pretty canny on this stuff, right? So for a lot of national liberals, they think Ted Cruz, they think of him through the prism of all these very online controversies, right? The Cancun vacation, the Bud Light and Barbie nonsense. And so they maybe see Cruz as a kind of buffoonish figure, but he's a very canny culture warrior, right? The Democratic strategist Sawyer Hackett, who advises an anti-Cruz PAC, calls him the wedge issue whisperer. He's good at exploiting this stuff. That's the thing. He seems like a buffoon, but he's damn good at fighting these culture wars. In what sense is he good at this, and how do you counter it?
Yeah. Well, you know, listen, I think it's probably true that he's one of the more effective demagogues that I've seen. But I also think that there's a reason why he's as unpopular as he is in the state of Texas. It's because there's only a certain amount of appetite for that, because we have so many other issues that we are dealing with. And so when folks see him, I think you're right. National folks might, I think, have a different perception of him than we do in Texas. But you mentioned, you know, him going to Cancun. I'll tell you this. There is no incident that I've talked to Texans more about that they can remember with more clarity than what they were doing the week that the power went out in the state of Texas and Ted Cruz went on vacation. And so, you know, stuff like that does stick, and it does matter. It does matter that we've had, you know, 26,000 women in our state who've been forced to give birth to their rapist child since this abortion ban passed, that we are seeing, you know, some of the downstream impacts of this abortion ban playing out all across our state, that we have, you know, counties that are saying, rural counties, that are saying you can't drive through the county if you're going to use the roads to access an abortion. That is attacking freedom. And to me, rural Texans, urban Texans, Texans of all stripes believe in freedom. And this is something that they have gotten on the wrong side of. When we're talking about whether or not folks should have access to IVF so they can, you know, experience the, you know, miracle of, you know, parenthood, then you know that we have, you know, kind of crossed over a line. And that's what I think has happened here. And that I think is going to be reflected in what we see in November, which is that, you know, I'm going to beat Ted Cruz. And when we do, it's going to be a surprise to a lot of folks. But I think for folks in Texas, you know, we're tired of his antics.
Well, look, between IVF and reproductive rights, there's a whole lot to use there. I want to return to something you brought up earlier. Trump has more vulnerabilities than he did in 2018 with the insurrection, the criminal trials, the overt threats to be a dictator, and so forth. And he's going to be on the ballot this fall. So clearly you need to run against Trump to some degree and link Cruz to him, right? Since Cruz was one of those who tried to help with the insurrection, basically. But at the same time, you have to win over some Trump voters, right? I mean, that's sort of essential in Texas. How do you thread this needle? Do you campaign against Trump's alleged crimes and dictator threats and so forth? How does that work?
Well, I've always been very clear that part of this election, when we talk about, I think this is going to be an election about freedom, is about, you know, protecting our democracy, and that our coalition includes Republicans who believe that we should accept election results and that we should, not try to overturn elections, that we shouldn't be attacking police officers and storming the Capitol, which, of course, the former president is responsible for. And so there's going to be no backing away from that. It's also true that he didn't do it alone. Ted Cruz was one of the chief architects of his attempt to overthrow the last election. In fact, he was the objector to the results in Arizona when we had to have one member of the House, one member of the Senate object at that time, and he was the senator who objected. So we're going to prosecute that case and make sure that folks know that, because I know that there are a lot of Texans who do believe in our democracy and don't want to go down that road. And so this is, though, going to be a separate race from the presidential election. And I think you'll see that in a lot of different ways. But this is going to be about me versus Ted Cruz, about my vision for Texas, my story, and where I think we can go together, versus the most divisive senator who's been, I think, not doing the job certainly that he's elected to do, who's been just a self-promoter, podcasting three times a week, voting against legislation that helps our state. And so this is going to be a separate race. And I think it should be, because we're picking a senator who's going to serve us for the next 6 years, longer than the term, the next president. And so while I'm not going to back away from my criticisms of particularly the former president, because I was there on the House floor on January 6th, as the only former NFL linebacker in the room, I thought I was going to have to defend my colleagues from that mob. So that's certainly seared into my memory. If you watch my launch video and things like that, we're not pulling any punches in terms of talking about it. This is going to be about me versus Cruz, and that is a different race.
Okay, and immigration is going to obviously be central to the contest between you and Cruz. It's an issue he demagogues on relentlessly. You recently signed on to a resolution that used the phrase open borders to define the Biden agenda. That angered some people and seemed to signal that you think this issue can be neutralized by accepting a kind of more right-leaning frame. Is that fair?
No, I don't think it's fair. I think that I'm always looking out for Texas first. And in that, it was a vote on the floor about whether or not basically you accepted or thought the status quo was working. And this was several months ago now. And I had been calling for some time for the administration to be much more aggressive and much more front foot in terms of addressing what was a growing crisis for us at the southern border. When we have 300,000 crossings in the month of December, which is a record number, and you have 10,000 a day, you're experiencing a crisis. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to respond to that crisis the way that the Republicans would in Texas. But I think when we were not responding, we were leaving a vacuum for bad actors like Greg Abbott to step into with barbed wire and, kind of fake military operations. This is a federal province, and the federal government needed to be, I think, much more front foot. And I think you'll see that actually from the president, going forward, is that I think they have now leaned into exactly what I think we need to do, which is to try everything we can to address this from a short-term plan to dealing with the asylum system that's broken and the surges that we're experiencing now, a medium-term plan to trying to find a comprehensive immigration reform to reform our entire system, which border security is one component of that, and then a long-term plan to try and stabilize or reduce the flow of these migrants from the countries that they're coming from. That's the exact opposite, though, of what Ted Cruz wants to do, because we saw what he wants to do. He took down the Senate package that had been negotiated in a bipartisan way to try and reform the asylum system and provide billions of dollars of additional assistance to our border communities in the form of more agents and immigration judges, administrative staff. He took that down because he wanted to be able to run on the issue and because Donald Trump told him to. And that's the exact opposite, of course, of how I want to serve in the Senate and how I've served in the House. I don't take orders from anybody. I do what I think is best for our state. And that's what we need, I think, is somebody who's an independent thinker who will actually look out for Texas first. And I think that's what most Texans want as well.
Yeah, it does seem like Ted Cruz and Republicans handed people like you a pretty big gift by doing Trump's bidding and killing the bipartisan immigration reform bill in the Senate. And I want to ask you about that. It seems like Democrats have a way to talk about immigration, particularly right now. And I want to see what you think of this. It seems like they can say immigrants are fueling the economic boom. They've helped the country rebound from the pandemic more successfully than other Western economies. And yet here, Trump and Stephen Miller are out there saying we're going to deport millions starting on day one and turn off migration and close the border. I mean, instead of killing that golden goose, Republicans should fix the system, right? So can Democrats basically say immigration is good and we want to make it work for the country and they want to turn it off?
Yeah. Well, my family's from Brownsville, which is at the tip of Texas, right on the border. My grandfather was a customs officer after serving in the Navy in the Pacific in World War II. That's where my mom and my aunt grew up. I spent a lot of my childhood visiting my grandmother there in Brownsville. And our border communities are very real places, but they're also very dynamic places because of the almost, you know, the kind of flow of you know, goods and people. And, you know, let's be very clear. Mexico is our number one trading partner for Texas, but also now nationally. It's an incredibly huge part of our economy. We have so many families that would be impacted by this kind of, you know, massive roundup that, you know, Donald Trump and Stephen Miller are talking about. It would be a disaster for Texas in a way that for no other state would be impacted as much as we would. And so we have to call that out for, you know, the how ridiculous it is, how un-American it is, how we cannot allow that to happen. And like you said, how legal immigration is a boon to our economy and to our country, and that what we need to do is make our legal immigration system work much better. But let me also say this. By fixing our legal immigration system, we will actually also help our secure our border. Because one of the things that these coyotes and these human smugglers take advantage of is the opaqueness of our immigration system, that folks don't know how they can come here legally. And so they say, hey, you know, there's, and they'll start a rumor. They literally will start a rumor and say, the border's open this week. Give us your life savings and we'll get you to the border, even though it's completely, you know, not true. And they'll take advantage of the fact that folks have no idea how they could properly do it, or that the system itself is so broken that they feel like it, that even if they go through the right processes, they'll never be able to have you know, some kind of access. And that is not working for us. Every employer I talk to wants to have immigration reform, whether it's, you know, Texas Instruments that's trying to hire, you know, the top programmers and you know, kind of STEM talent from around the world, or whether it's the Father and Son Roofing Company in my district that wants more roofers. Everybody wants us to fix our immigration system on the business side as well. And so I think they certainly have opened that up for us in terms of, you know, we are for fixing our legal immigration system. We are for securing our border in a way that's consistent with our values. And we are for protecting our dreamers and providing a pathway out of the shadows for folks who are here, who are undocumented, and ending this kind of, you know, ridiculous system that we've been experiencing, particularly in states like Texas, that just, you know, really isn't working anymore.
Yeah, I mean, when you hear Democrats from border states talk about the border, they treat it as a real thing. Whereas at this point, Republicans like Ted Cruz treat it as a fantasy zone. They're kind of,
that's right.
They're really plugged into this kind of national right, mega right-wing media network that has turned the border into something that's almost entirely symbolic.
That's right. And it's completely untrue. And I can tell you, folks on the border do not like this, you know, this picture they are trying to paint of their communities as being overrun, unsafe. Nothing could be further from the truth. While we have a crisis that we have to respond to, when Ted Cruz does that, he's also putting down our border communities in a way that, you know, I think is outrageous.
Well, that seems like a strong set of arguments to me. It is Texas, but maybe the dream will come through finally. Congressman, thank you so much for your insights.
Yeah, thanks so much, Greg.
Folks, don't miss these new pieces up at TNR.com today. Walter Shapiro on the State of the Union Address and Biden's need to rebrand himself. And Aaron Regenberg on the case for prosecuting corporations over climate change. We'll see you all tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.